Welcome to Black Men's Mental Health Podcast. Society doesn't want you to blame anything but yourself. It's a trait, not mental health. People out there is not going to understand you until you let them know. You definitely got to take into account your mental health. You have to tune into your own mind. Hey, what's going on? It's your man Casanova Williams, another Black Men's Mental Health Podcast. First, as usual, I gotta thank everybody for supporting me, rocking with me, showing me love. You know, you said you like the new format of the podcast. So at the end of the day, we're gonna keep that going, okay? So, what is this? As you see from the title, Trauma You Can't See. Now, this is very interesting subject. For me, because I recently in the last few months, well, like maybe mid last year, actually faced this myself. So I'm from New York. You know, I was born and raised in the projects on welfare. Mother had me when 16. Father wasn't there. You know, I was raised around a lot of poverty. I was raised around a lot of drug use. My family, they were using drugs, friends, families using drugs, alcohol, all these things that were going on. So at the end of the day, we had a lot of things that happened growing up. A lot of fights. My family would fight physically, argue all the time. You know what I'm saying? Saw drug users and dealers. I mean, but see, this is the thing. When you live in New York and you live in the hood, that's just part of life. That wasn't anything that was special. Wasn't anything that was, you know, out of the ordinary. And when you live in trauma like that, it becomes your life. It becomes normal. And when you're not in trauma, it's weird. Like, for example, in New York, nobody says hi to each other. Nobody says what's up. Because where I'm from, when somebody says what's up to you or hi to you, that's beef. Like, if I don't know you, say what's up, I'm like, oh, well, you know, I moved down to Florida. And everybody's saying hi to me. And at first I'm getting mad. I'm like, yo, why the fuck everybody say hi to me? Y'all don't know them like that. Oh, I come down, stop, they beefing with me. Very aggressive, because that's why I was raised. That was how I was raised. So I was talking to my son and I was telling him about how I was raised. And I always tell my son a bunch of stories, right? And thing about New York is when you go through all that stuff, it's like a badge of honor. Like you went through, you real, you kept it real. You the man because you went through that. You know what I'm saying? Things like that. So I'm telling my son about how I was raised. And I guess in a way I was bragging about it in a way, like, you know, I'm from the school of hard knocks a lot. And my son looked at me, he said, Dad, that isn't like cool. That's like traumatic. Because I was talking about everything, you know, things I went through. And like I said, I know I've told him a story a billion times. You know what I mean? But, you know, this time he just looked at me and said, Dad, that is really traumatic what you went through. That's like trauma. That's not cool. And I looked at him at first. I'm like, man, you don't know nothing, kid. You're a little thing. But then I started to really think about it. Started to think of it from the lens of outside of being a New Yorker. And my son was right. That is traumatic. That is sad to go through that, to see fighting and drugs and killings and stabbings and have the fight of getting jumped. And I mean, it is truly traumatic. You know, men go to war for a year and come back with PTSD just from that experience. But imagine being in a hostile, aggressive, violent environment for 18 years of your life. I mean, there's no way in hell you come out of that great. See, a lot of Black men, we don't understand that things that are quote unquote normal are really traumatic. Are really traumatic. Because at the end of the day, like, these things are not normal, but because they were normalized in our life, that we tend to take it as we flip it from, and you know, Black people do this all the time. We flip pain and suffering into something positive. And we do that same with trauma. We turn that to a badge of honor that I went through the wall. I'm real. I keep it real, but it's really traumatic. See, there's a trend out there called high functioning trauma. Meaning that you seem perfect, everything is fine, but you still have that traumatic incident. And then it comes out extreme. Like for me, the trauma came out extreme. Like I had a very, it comes out other ways. Like I had a very high sexual drive, right? Because when I was younger, I saw a lot of inappropriate sexual things that I probably should have saw at that age. I was exposed to things sexually that that I shouldn't have been at that age. But see, in the hood, in the black community, for a man to be engaged in sex early, whether it's with an older woman or it doesn't matter, it's not traumatic, it's a badge of honor. You're the man. If some 30-year-old comes on to me at age of 15, I have sex with her, everybody will be saying you're the man. But if that happened vice versa to a woman, is oh my God, is rape or in another culture, that's inappropriate. But for us, we take it as a badge of honor. And we don't know that that's breaking us down, leading us down a bad path. Now, I always refer to DSM-5 because the DSM-5 is really, really good at breaking down a lot of these mental health issues. One thing I was fascinated by when I wrote my book about 5 years ago, Black Men's Mental Health Bible, I did a lot of research on the DSM-5 and looked at a lot of things up. And the explanations, as I do in the book, you can pick the book up still, it's on Amazon. It was a bestseller when I put it out years ago. But the descriptions of things were so related to just regular things that you see in black men that it was fascinating. And I kept reading and reading and reading. And I wanted to put so many different mental health things in the book, but I just had to limit myself to what I thought was important. So anxiety, depression, PTSD, things like that. But there were so many others as well. But with trauma in general, you know what I'm saying? Intrusive symptoms like unwanted memories and dreams and reactions, meaning that like you react to things maybe a little bit more, your emotions a little bit more high. Also, another thing that you could do that, you know, do you like avoidance? Do you avoid things? You know what I'm saying? Staying away from reminders, emotions, conversations. Like you can't speak about your mama back in the day. You can't speak about daddy. You can't speak about Uncle Joey. You know what I'm saying? Or Auntie Nay. Or you can't speak about all that stuff. And then the other part is also negative changes in mood and thinking. Like, I know I was at a place where like everything was negative. My thoughts about things, my views about things, very negative. It was like, man, I was so negative about everything. And not because I wanted to be negative. It was because I think it was just a defense mechanism from trauma. Because see, trauma isn't just, you know, trauma is like PTSD, sexual thing, you know, sexual, inappropriate sexual stuff that may have happened to you. You know what I'm saying? It's all like related, trauma-related disorders, you know what I'm saying? PTSD and all this other stuff. So you have to understand that, like, it's very important that you identify that there is trauma. You know what I'm saying? Another thing that's really good with trauma is hyper arousal. You know what I'm saying? Irritability, poor sleeping, being on edge. A lot of us has poor sleeping. One of the things when I was diagnosed with anxiety and depression, another thing I was diagnosed with was sleep deprivation. I was getting maybe 2 to 3 hours of sleep a night. I was not sleeping good at all. So if you know my story, when I went into the facility, one of the things they allowed me to do was stay in and sleep, right? Because usually when you go to those facilities, like I volunteered in because, like, you know, if you know my story, you follow me. I had a nervous breakdown. I volunteered to go into one of those behavioral centers, right? Now, the first thing I learned when I was in there, I wasn't crazy. I had no, there were people in there that really had some really, really big medical issues. But when I talked to my doctor and the doctor that was on there at the time, and we were talking and stuff like that, you know, he diagnosed me with depression, anxiety. And then, you know, we talked about my sleeping patterns, and I told him my sleeping patterns. So maybe 2 to 3 hours of sleep. I wasn't really sleeping well at all. He looked at me. He said, you know what? Anxiety, depression, and sleep deprivation is a deadly combination. And that happens to a lot of people that are on the go, people that look like they're functioning okay, but they're really not. You know, he said everything that you went through is a combination, just came at once. And that's the problem when you don't recognize the trauma in your life, it just hits you at one point. For me, it hit me. It felt like the world was collapsing in on me. And trust me, during my life, I've dealt with a lot of drama, a lot of things. Well, you know, but this, it just sometimes things happen in a combination that just tip you over. And that's what it did for me. So what they allowed me to, now when you're in this facility, you know, I'm speaking about my experience. Most of them won't allow you to stay in your room all day. They you know, you get up at a certain time, you get breakfast, then you're in like the lounge area. Then they have like different sessions and stuff. But because of my sleep deprivation, the way it was, they allowed me to sleep. They allowed me to stay in a room. They gave me some medicine. And I'm not gonna lie, that first night there was the most peaceful night and sleep I got in my life. Like, it was phenomenal. And I stayed in the bed for hours and just slept. And it was like a beautiful thing, like completely beautiful. Because see, before I went and I told my wife, and like I said, I'm not going to reiterate the whole story, but I was telling my wife, I felt like there was a cloud over my head. I felt like, you know, that's the only way I could describe it. Like, there was a cloud. And I told my wife, and she looked at me and said, oh, go on, whatever. But that was at a time my wife didn't understand, and things were different back then. So that's a whole nother story. But you know, I always felt like there was a cloud over my head. Like, there was like just something around me on my head that I couldn't get past. You know, the best way to describe it is a cloud, but you know, was it, you know, it's a mental cloud, you know, that I just couldn't get past. And after I slept, the cloud was lifted. It was like I had clarity again, like my eyesight came back. So at the end of the day, you know, we don't recognize the trauma as Black men. We don't recognize that we're going through trauma. We really don't. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's statistically known that Black Americans, not just Black men, but in general, Black Americans report higher rates of trauma exposure than any other group. I mean, think about that. Among Black men ages 18 to 34, PTSD rates have found to be higher than in older age groups. Meaning, see, this goes back to what I was saying before. You live in the hood. You live in a toxic household, a toxic environment. In your surroundings, you see violence, you see killing, you see drugs, you see murder, you see everything, right? But it's normal. But people go to war for a year, sometimes less than a year, and come back with PTSD. So you're telling me that our young Black men, including myself, living in the hood, living in those conditions, surviving every day, hustling every day to survive, getting in trouble, all this stuff, that there is no PTSD that we get at 18? Because if you think about that statistic, it says men among 18 to 34, 18 to 34, they report higher rates than older, meaning that they go through trauma growing up, right? When they become adults, 18, that trauma starts to affect you. It really starts to mold your life. It's part of your life, part of who you are. But the older you get, the more healing you could do. Unfortunately, we may do healing through getting a family, living, all that stuff, but there's still traits there. But the older you get, the more you can deal with it, the more you can mask it. But from 18 to 34, I understand that statistic, because at the end of the day, those are the years where you're becoming an adult, you're working hard, you're trying to build yourself, X, Y, Z, things like that. So I'm you know, like I said, you know, because trauma really isn't what happened. It's about how you react to what happened. Right? Because at the end of the day, it's like how people like whiplash, or you get an injury, like you may get hurt, you may get hit, right? And you know what? It's like football, right? You could be playing football and you get hit in the head, right? And they keep getting concussions, right? These football players, right? They keep getting hit in the head and they're functioning fine, right? But then years later, once they stop playing football, it starts to affect them. Right. That, to me, that's what trauma is. It's something that like you deal with, you take the hits. But then when you get out that environment, then you start seeing the repercussions of the trauma you had when you was younger. So, Yeah. So let's talk about, as far as the DSM-5, right? Because like I said, I'm always going to refer to the DSM-5 because I want to educate my black men now. I want to educate my black sisters as well. And I want to educate people in general that want to understand black men. You know what I mean? And I told you this focus is going to be a lot more clinical, a lot more focus on disorders and mental health. So, you know, I'm not going to be doing the rhetoric about, you know, what's going on in the news and all that. I may touch upon that, but just for educational purposes, I really want this podcast to be focused. So let's talk about the DSM-5 criteria for like how hidden trauma could look. So maybe you could notice it yourself. All right. So do you always scan a room or a situation before? Now, this is not like just, you know, making sure your environment is chill. Don't get me wrong. But it's like when you go in there, it's like you looking around like, yo, where are the exits? Who's around? What's the dangers? You know what I'm saying? Oh, that situation. You know what I'm saying? You always have this negative view of it, right? It's not like you're a security guard, you're getting paid. But every situation you go into, you fear that like, yo, something's going to go wrong. So I got to know what's up, right? That's from trauma. That's invisible trauma, right? Let's go to something else. Difficulty relaxing and even having good moments. It's like if you can't be happy, right? You just can't chill out and be happy. I used to be like that. I couldn't chill. Like I was told, right, that during sex, I'm working so hard that the woman don't even think I'm enjoying it because I'm like working. I'm doing what I gotta do to make sure she good. But she's like, are you enjoying yourself? Right? I can't relax because I'm always worried about things. Now, I know sex maybe might be the best example. But what I'm saying is sometimes when you have a certain thing in your head, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know what? Sex does make sense. Let me tell you the trauma I have. And this is absolute truth, right? And this is me being transparent. When I was younger, my mother had a porno collection, and she had a porno collection on top of the cabinet where, you know, I shouldn't be able to, I wasn't a tall kid at the time. I was short, so I shouldn't be able to grab it, right, at all, right? But my curious dumbass self, right, got a little chair one day my mama was at home, you know what I'm saying? And I got a chair, and because, you know, I was like a latchkey kid, you know what I'm saying? After school, you come home in elementary, whatnot. So one day, you know, I used to briefly see stuff up there. What the hell's that? So I one day, you know, got the chair, looked up there, boom, my mama had her porno boxes. Now, my mama must have liked BBC pornos, you know what I'm saying? Horse Hunt, all that stuff. But at that time, I didn't know the difference, right? So I look at the box, and that was my first impression of a man. Like, I've never saw a penis before. Like there was no reason for me to see a penis. I wasn't looking in school with, you know, when I'm in the toilet, you know, maybe my little cousins, you know, changing their diapers and stuff. I never really saw or paid attention to a man penis. Like, you know, I just wasn't in a space where I'm sitting next to a guy in a toilet. You know, it just never happened. That was the first time I saw a penis. And it was like a 13, 14 incher. It was just exaggerating. I think now that I look back, I think the box was probably drawn or something. You know what I'm saying? Like, to look real, I don't know. Or, you know, enhanced. But it was like freaking like, oh my God, like an elephant trunk, right? So that stuck in my head because I'm like, damn it, my mom's had like a whole bunch of this stuff. So I thought that's what, and then, you know, you go to school with your boys, right? Everybody talking about, yeah, I got the biggest penis in the world. You know how you talk, guy talk, right? So growing up, I'm thinking like, damn, I don't, I'm young still, whatever, but it stuck with me. So I'm growing up, right? And I'm getting into it with girls and, you know, your boys are still talking shit and all this other stuff. And I'm looking at my development thinking like, damn, what's going on? You know what I'm saying? What's going on with me? It was like, you know, my shit ain't no 13 inches. Like, damn, why am I, you know, at that time, why am I peaking out like, you know, 7.5, 8 right now? You know what I'm saying? Even as a doctor, I was like, oh, you still got some time to grow more, blah, blah, blah. The average size is like 5. So you're well, I'm like, but in my head, I'm like, nah, you know, you're just saying that, doctor. Even my mama, you know, which is weird. My mom was like, oh no, you're like your daddy. I'm like, oh, but you know, I never wanted to ask my mom about the porno. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm just thinking, well, she's my mom. She's trying to be nice to me. You know what I'm saying? So my first sexual experience, I was 14, and I was definitely scared. I was so scared because I thought that I was small. I really had this idea in my head. I was small. So what? So first time I'm having, you know, I'm doing it with a female. I whip it out. I'm scared. And I'm like, oh, you know, blah, blah. She's like, oh, my God. I'm like, oh, my God, what's going on? You know, so I'm thinking she's like being mad. She's like, oh, man, you know, small, you know, I thought she's gonna laugh at me because I was really, really afraid of that. I really was. I'm not gonna lie, because of earlier in my life when I saw that, that's what I thought the standard was for a black man and how we talk how black men have big penises. All the, so I thought that was the standard. So my first girl, 14, I whipped it out and I was like, oh, you know, blah, blah. She's like, wow. Oh, my God. Whoa. I was like, well, she's like, that's kind of big. I'm like, no, it's not, you know, not really. You know what I'm saying? She's like, oh, yeah, it is. I'm like, how do you know? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's not like we all had experience and shit. You know what I'm saying? So then I'm just thinking, you know what? She probably just saying that because she's my girl at the time, whatnot. So, you know, so then my second experience, you know, it was me and my boy was in the house. You know what I'm saying? He was with some girl. I was with some girl in the other room. And then I go into his room and then like I saw his condom. And the condom looks small compared to what I could fit, right? And I was like, why is his? So you know what I'm saying? I'm like, hey, yo, dude. And my friend was like popular. Like I wasn't that popular, but my best friend was real popular and stuff. So I'm thinking like, damn, why was his not as big as, you know what I'm saying? It's mine. You know, I got the, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, and you know, I'm with the girl. Then, you know, I'm with the girl in the room. And she's like, oh, my God. I'm like, what the hell's going on? You know what I'm saying? I'm like, you know, oh, they faking it. In my head, I just had they were faking it. So over the years, you know, I've had sexual experiences, stuff like that. And I'm confident. I'm very confident. But see, there's a part of that trauma of seeing something I shouldn't have saw when I was younger that sticks with me, that makes me work hard. So a lot of women are like, oh, you can't relax during sex. You just working. You going. It's like after one after another, you licking, you zucking, oh, you doing all this stuff to me. You know what I'm saying? You going, you know, you going for it. Yeah, I used to like literally, I used to be like, I gotta go for like an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. Like literally, I was on that crazy sex drive, crazy, hence the name Casanova. You know what I'm saying? Cause I was really like, you know, I felt that I had to prove something through my skills rather than because I was lacking. Even though I've never in my life, even to the time, you know what I'm saying? Never in my life was told, oh, your penis is small. Never in my life, never. But the trauma of seeing something at that age that I wasn't supposed to see, because at that age, you're not supposed to see those boxes and those portals. You're not supposed to see that because it does change your idea of, it's like young men having sex young. We're not supposed to do that because it warps your idea of what your sexuality is. Not sexuality like bi or nothing, like, I mean sexuality of like as a man, you know what I'm saying? My emphasis became my penis size. And because of that, it forced me to not enjoy sex, to work during sex. Now, some women weren't complaining, don't get me wrong, you know what I'm saying? But it wasn't for my pleasure, it was for hers because I felt I had something to prove because of that trauma. See, a trauma isn't always violent. Trauma isn't always something that's like obvious. Trauma is experiences or things you're exposed to that you're not supposed to be exposed to at the age you're at. You're not supposed. I wasn't supposed to be looking up in those cabinets and seeing big freaking 14-inch penises because at that age, I never saw that before. So that became the base of the foundation of what I thought I should be as a man. And then it didn't help that in our culture, black men, we brag about our penis size. Oh, I tore that pussy up. My dick was so big. She was screaming. I mean, that's as they call it, the locker room talk. You know what I'm saying? Every guy does it. We all do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, man, I was killing that pussy, man. She was screaming. I was so deep in her guts, man. My dick is so big. You know, I mean, that's how guys talk, especially black men. You know what I'm saying? Because that's masculine. You know what I'm saying? So for me, for years, even when I knew for a fact that I was packing well, I still had those feelings. So when I get engaged sexually, there was a vulnerability, an insecurity that was still there that I had to be the best. I had to tear it up. I had to do everything. I had to lick it the best, screw it the best. Different. I had to do everything rather than just enjoying it with who I was with, having that shared experience. See, that's trauma. And like I said, I'm not trying to make this a sexual podcast, but I think a lot of black men can relate to that, understanding that when we're young, we're told what sex is and we're trying to live up to that. When at the end of the day, that's not reality. You know what I'm saying? That's just not reality. But see, this is the fantasy we put out there. And then what happens is that the trauma sets in, and then we live by that standard for the rest of our life. And not just sex. Sex is not only thing. There's a lot of thing for black men that where trauma comes from. You know, chronic exposure to racism and discrimination. I mean, we knew growing up in New York that the cops were on some bullshit all the time. You know what I'm saying? We felt racism in certain areas. So at the end, then it makes it worse now in today's society is that even though you may know it's racism, they have so many laws and so many things that will make you think you're the crazy one. And that is not racism. It's just DEI practices or you know they don't like you for the job because you're black, but they give you a reason like, oh, you're not qualified or overqualified, things like that. Another thing is community violence. Unfortunately, in the black community, we see so much violence, not only in our neighborhoods, but in our music, in our dress, in everything. We see so much violence, especially in media, because they highlight black men, particularly black men doing violent crimes. They pitch it so differently. A white person does it. It's like, oh, suburban white man, drug addicted white man did this. Black man, known lifelong criminal, they promote violence outside of our community and within our community. We do it to ourselves as well. Our music, our style, everything promotes violence, aggression. You know what I'm saying? Also, another thing that trauma people don't talk about, another place where trauma comes up is financial instability. You know, at the end of the day, it seems like we're always struggling for more money in our community, especially black men. You know, we're expected to pay for a woman, take care of her, take care of our kids and things like that, support. So when we're financially unstable, it affects us because I grew up in the projects on welfare, right? My mama didn't have a lot of money. You know, we would eat good in the beginning of the month when she get her check, and then it goes down to we eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches or shit, just bread with peanut butter sometimes or just bread and jelly. You know what I'm saying? Because there was no other income but that. She'll go buy a whole bunch of hundreds of dollars worth of food, fill up the fridge, fill up the cabinets. We eating good. We eating steak and lobster the first few weeks, the first week or two. But then that last 2 weeks, we struggling. See, that's an environment that financially you're unstable. So then you grow up with this anxiety about money. Like you get it, you want to keep it, you want to be stingy. Or vice versa, you get it, you spend it all. We don't have financial literacy because the way we were raised. Also, another thing that stress, the trauma comes from is family stress passed down across generations. Like, I can tell you that a lot of the fights when I was growing up between my uncle, my aunt, my mother, my grandmother, my great grandmother at times was their issues they had when they were younger. Now, I can tell you stories about what happened to my family, my mama, my grandmother, they got stories, but those traumas keep getting passed down. They fought all the time about the past. It was never nothing present. It was always the past. And then to deal with that past, instead of getting counseling or working together, they would fight with each other and or use drugs and alcohol to numb the pain. Alcohol use and drug use was big in my family. My uncle was alcoholic and did cocaine for a while. My grandmother was an alcoholic. My great grandmother was an alcoholic. My mother was on crack for a period of time. You know what I'm saying? My aunt was on crack for a period of time. You know what I'm saying? There was violence between them. My aunt, my family, violence in their relationships, stabbings and fights and hospitals and all this stuff. That is something that's generational, passed down. And I see it in some of my cousins where their life and what they're doing is a result of trauma that happened when they were young. It's passed down. It's never healed. I try to heal myself by going to counseling and stuff like that, because I don't want to pass it to my son. But even now, my son is 18, and I noticed that there's still toxic traits that I have done through his life. Now, don't get me wrong. My son is living the best life. He's living his best life. You know, he has no problems with issues. He's in school. He's about to graduate. You know what I'm saying? He's going to go to college. You know what I'm saying? He's not out there in the streets. So we did a good job. We did a good job. So I'm not mad about that. But I do notice that there were some things as a parent that I did that I wish I wouldn't have done. Not because, you know, I was, you know, abusive. So no, because I think I said, man, I was doing that. I was yelling like that. I was doing that because of what I went through. Because of how I was raised. You know, there was always an ass whipping in my house. You didn't have the right to talk. You didn't have the right to express your feelings. You know what I'm saying? True story. One time, I believe I was in the fourth grade or fifth grade. I'm not sure. The third grade. It was one of those grades at elementary school. I went to my counselor. I was talking to my counselor about all the problems in my house. You know, all the fighting and drug use and alcoholism. I told her about all that. She said, you know, this is really concerning. Why don't you bring your mother in and we can sit down. We can talk. I was like, great. I remember this like yesterday, right? I am in my 40s now. And this is when I had to be like 10, maybe. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? But I was young. But I remember this crystal clear. So after I talk to the counselor, I go home. I go to my mother. I say, hey, Ma, the counselor said we could come in. And my mom's like, why? I was like, well, because, you know, all the fighting and things were going on in the house and stuff. You know, there's problems that we should talk about. My mother looked at me and said, hold on. I'm not going to school. We got no problems. You got the problem. So you talk to the counselor. I don't got no problem. You got the problem, so you talk to the counselor. Right then and there, I stopped looking for help. The counselor came back to me. She said, hey, how's everything with your family? I was like, well, everything's good. We're going to see a counselor. She said, oh, good, good, no problem. Nothing's been resolved. Nothing was resolved. But I did that because that showed me that there was, in my family, there was no room for me to express myself, no room to get help. So I shut down. I thought I was doing better with my son. And I know to a big degree I was doing way better than my family. You know what I'm saying? But I could have done more, maybe. You know what I'm saying? I could have been more understanding. And I noticed that the trauma that I had growing up stuck with me and became traits within me when I was parenting. Now, once again, I'm going to say my son's good. My son and my daughter, they're great. I mean, my son gets great, good grades. He has like a 3-point-something average in school. He's going to go to college. He's down on them streets. He's not getting nobody pregnant. He stays himself, plays video games, all that stuff. I mean, he does his thing. You know, he's a good kid. So we know we did a good job. But that doesn't mean I still can't reflect and say, what could I have done better? I mean, I don't reflect on a lot now because I ain't having no more kids. You know what I'm saying? But it's still good to recognize that, especially if I'm helping other young black men or black men in general, or black fathers, things like that. You know, I need to say, OK, well, these are the mistakes I made or things I could have done better, because no matter if you're the perfect person, there's always room for improvement. So you can't think of like, man, if I think of things I did wrong or things I could have done better, then that means I failed. No, you didn't fail. It's called life. It's called learning. You never stop learning. The minute you stop learning is when you die. So at the end of the day, you want to keep learning, because as soon as you stop learning, you die. So you have to understand that things that happen when you're younger affect you to this day. That affect me to this day. To open it up. You know, now, don't get me wrong, I'm still very communicative. You know, my wife, I communicate very well. I'm very open about my emotions, but there's still parts of me that feel closed. There's still parts of me that, or maybe I should say, there still feels parts of me that I feel should be closed, that I shouldn't open up to, but I have to force myself to because I have the feeling that I shouldn't. So that trauma stays with you. Now, we have a lot of different trauma things. You have, depression, PTSD. I mean, there's a lot of things that you have when it comes to trauma. But we were just talking about it in general, you know what I'm saying? Because we could get specific about every type of trauma, mental health issues, stuff like that. But I wanted to really focus on trauma in general, because I think we don't recognize that we've been through trauma and it's affecting our lives right now, especially Black men. There's no way as a Black man in America that you can't see the image of you every single time crime or something bad happens. The image is you, meaning you being a Black man. That's what it is. It's like the white man is God and the Black man is the devil. We are on the opposite sides of public opinion. We are opposite sides of the law. We are opposite sides of what justice is. So we have to understand that at the end of the day, our trauma is different than their trauma. Our trauma, we have to self-diagnose, because they're not going to help us out. They're not going to diagnose us. They're going to say that's just a trait of who you are. You're a Black man, you're violent, you're over-sexualized, you're scared, you're a criminal, you're all of this. And then we help them. We help them by showing them that their stereotypes of us are true. And it's because we have so much trauma. Because we go through so much that we react a certain way. Now, there's no excuse for it. Don't get me wrong. There is no excuse for crime, killing, robbing, stealing. There's no excuse for it. It doesn't matter if you got abused and your ass beat every day for 18 years. You should still not do crime. But see, the problem is that unlike other races of men and other cultures, they have the opportunity to get help and be better, and the community as a whole supports it. Black men, we don't have that choice. The community does not rally around us because of our mental health issues. We are told either you'd stop it, find Jesus, work harder, man up, you just use excuses, all of that. That's what they say to us when we say we have a problem. So we have to work at identifying the problem in ourselves. My hope is that when I give you the knowledge, you can recognize that in yourself and do what you got to do to get help for yourself. Because nobody's going to give you sympathy as a Black man in America. You will never get the benefit of the doubt. You will never be the person they look at as the person beyond what they want you at. Black men, they love us sexually. Oh yeah. A Black man can go anywhere around the world and a woman's going to want you. We are the highest seek lovers and partners in the world. But the problem is that because of that, other races are jealous. They hate on us. Our Black women have been turned against us. We are the enemy out here. So we have to be sure that we identify what our issues are, that we have the tools to self-diagnose and say, I have some trauma I have to deal with. And then go about the proper way. Because at the end of the day, you can pay for any counselor. You know what I'm saying? Go to counseling. Go to therapy. Because at the end of the day, nobody's going to come and help you get there. You have to get there on your own. See, the difference between men and women is that women are born with their wealth. Out the box, a woman is worth something. She is the mother. She provides the population. She births the population. So a woman is born with her worth, right? Men, we have to earn our worth. And that's across the board. But for Black men, it's even harder because we don't only have to prove that, you know, we don't only have to build ourselves up, but we have to prove and show and dance for the rest of the world to show them that we're good. Even when we're doing everything right, they still gonna think we're doing everything wrong. Oh, he looked good. He carried himself well. He probably a cheater. He got money. He's successful. Oh, he probably did some criminal stuff to do it. Oh, he's a basketball player. Like, even our success is met with criticism. And that thinking that we've grown up with all our lives, that we ain't shit. And then even when we get to a point where we're something, they're still looking to get us. Now, I'm not saying people like P. Diddy and R. Kelly and Bill Cosby are right. Not at all. But at the end of the day, if it's not the same, it was a white man. They're not in jail. People, you met Epstein and Weinstein. Like, yeah, too. But tell me how many white men that have done the same thing that R. Kelly and what did that are in jail or that got away with it. Or they brushed it under the rug. Now, I want you to understand, I'm not saying either is right. I'm not saying one is better than the other, one is right. No, I'm not saying that. But I'm talking about the treatment. So we have to recognize our trauma and we have to go healing. We have to heal ourselves because nobody's going to help us. Nobody's going to heal us. Nobody's going to say, oh, give us sympathy or understanding. We have to recognize it and then do the work ourselves to be healed. Because at the end of the day, like I keep saying, nobody's going to recognize your mental health. Nobody's going to recognize your trauma. So please take what I say and take it further. Look into your childhood. Look into things that happened to you and be real to yourself. That shit was traumatic. And that has affected me to this day. So now I got to get better. Please, black man. All right, guys. Once again, I thank you for listening to me. I told you my podcast is going to be more focused on mental health and really getting that message out there because we need this platform. We need it. I need it. You know what I'm saying? So until next time, guys, you go. Oh, let me. Well, before I go, you go to www.CasanovaWilliams.com and check out everything I'm doing. I'm not going to sit here and promote on the show like I used to, but you go to CasanovaWilliams.com. You see everything I'm doing from my network to my natural line to everything I'm doing is on that webpage. Also, if you want to check this podcast out with others, of course, I'm on all platforms, including the Culture Radio Network. I'm also on all platforms, Culture Radio Network, and you can go to blackmensmentalhealth.com, and that is my domain. That's my site. You can listen to this podcast and all the rest of the podcasts. All right, guys, until next time.